Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. It's the most wonderful time of the year, and we've got a wonderful topic today. We're going to talk about how you can invest in a property with zero deferred maintenance and a whole lot of attraction to tenants. It's the idea of building to rent, and we've got a great guest today on the Real Estate Guys radio program. If you've been listening to the Real Estate Guys for a while, then you've heard about the legendary Investor Summit. Simply put, it's the highest level event we do, and the content, faculty, and attendees are amazing. If you're serious about taking your real estate investment to the next level, consider joining us. You'll spend more than a week with like-minded investors, world-class educators, and real-world professionals, and you'll have a blast. It all begins June 11th, 2020 in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Visit realestateguysradio.com and click the tab that says Summit to learn more and get on the advance notice list. We'll spend 2.5 days on land learning and networking, then jump aboard a luxury cruise ship for more classes, roundtable discussions, great dinner conversations, and a ton of fun. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click Summit and make plans to hang out with the Real Estate Guys and an all-star faculty on the 18th annual Investor Summit at Sea. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, it's our financial strategist and co-host, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, my friend. It has been such an interesting year, and I know we are all looking forward to an amazing 2020 in lots of regards. And today, we're going to talk about kind of an interesting niche within real estate. And this is actually one of the things we're seeing happening more and more. It's the idea of builders who don't build a property to sell to an owner-occupant, which is what most builders do. It's building to sell to an investor, otherwise known as build to rent.
Yeah, it's really interesting to watch the housing industry in particular change over the last several years since the housing crisis, since the big meltdown in 2008. You know, they stopped building, and you and I were commenting way back in the day about how there was so little building going on relative to household formation and population growth that we were headed to some point in the future an inevitable housing shortage. And so for the people that could see that and get in front of it, it was great. Another thing that happened that was a little bit different is you saw big money, hedge fund money, Wall Street type money come in on the ownership side, not just on the funding the mortgage side. And so it kind of changed the flavors of the market. In the home building side, and we follow a guy named John Burns, and he started commenting about this some time ago, there was a trend as home builders were looking to find people that they could sell to, that they could build for, and with the millennials and student debt and them not forming households as early or buying as much as soon in their life, maybe as their parents and grandparents had done, this concept of build to rent came up and they began to cater to it. And, you know, now we're sitting in a situation where home builders are at a 20-year high in terms of their confidence and their optimism about their industry. And so all of these things have kind of come together at the same time. But this is a concept in many ways you could say whose time has come.
Boy, it sure is. I remember we dabbled in this a little bit. We weren't actually builders, but we would find builders who had inventory. And because we had a big group of listeners and students that wanted to own investment property, we'd catch a builder who was, you know, maybe in phase one of three and say, what if we came and bought all the rest of your inventory? And he would say, well, you mean taking all of the market risk off the table? Yeah, I'd be interested in that and I'd give you a better price for it. And we'd, of course, turn that kind of over to the investors and it became a real win-win. It was great for the developer because he no longer had the question of when the properties would sell. It was great for the investors because they could get inventory that they otherwise wouldn't. And it was great ultimately for the tenants because the tenants would get these brand new, beautiful properties. And for the owner, the investor, typically there'd be a warranty from the builder.
And the thing is, when you're actually building the property with the landlord in mind and the tenant in mind, you can do some value engineering that maybe you wouldn't do if you were selling to owner occupants that allows you to bring in the product at a more competitive price, a better ROI, if you will. And yet it doesn't do anything to diminish the attraction of the property to the tenant. And of course, then you have the ongoing maintenance costs involved. So some of the things that a builder can do in terms of the construction to make the property a little bit easier to own from a landlording perspective. So when you're starting with a blank slate and you know exactly who you're building for and what their needs are, it's building for a landlord is a little bit different than building for a homeowner, an owner-occupant.
Our guest today is Steve Olson. He's with Fourplex Investment Group, and what they do is they build brand new fourplexes. They've done so in a variety of markets, and they're about to enter a brand new market. We're going to hear about it today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you achieving everything you want in life? What if there was a time-tested way for you to get everything you've dreamed of? The most successful people in life set goals and keep themselves accountable. But how? The good news is that it's not rocket science. You too can learn the skills and unleash the motivation that will create success in your life. And now is the time. Hi, this is Robert Helms, and I'd like to personally invite you to attend Create Your Future, the 2020 Goals Retreat, January 17th to 19th in beautiful Lake Las Vegas, Nevada. This unique weekend has been called phenomenal, inspirational, and life-changing by the thousands of people that have attended. Hear from some of them and find out more at realestateguysradio.com under events, or call 888-489-7723, extension 18. Get your life back on track, physically, spiritually, and financially. Attend the 2020 Goals Retreat on the third weekend of the new year. Click events at realestateguysradio.com to register. This is no dress rehearsal. Live the life you were meant to. Visit realestateguysradio.com or call 888-489-7723, extension 18 today.
Having trouble finding deals where the numbers make sense? Invest in an asset class that delivers cash flow to you in good times and bad, and where most of that cash flow is tax-free. I'm Dave Zook. Many of you have heard me speak at Real Estate Guys events or heard me on their podcast. My team is a top 5 ATM operator in the country, and right now accredited investors can make cash flow returns well into the double digits and get huge tax deductions. For your free report on this lucrative asset class, email atm@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Mark Skousen, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every week on this great station all the time at realestateguysradio.com. About to enter our 23rd year of broadcast. Seems crazy. Hey, we're talking today about this idea of building to rent, setting out with the premise of building something brand new, not for people to live in, but to rent out. And please welcome back to the program our good friend and our guest today, Steve Olson from Fourplex Investment Group. Hey, Steve.
Hey, good to be back in Dallas.
Well, it's good to have you here. And oh my gosh, we have so much to talk about. First of all, this is an area that you know quite a bit about. It's the primary core offering of what you guys do. You build brand new fourplexes for investors, not for owner-occupants.
Right.
And I know you were just at a recent conference. We've been in that conference a couple times talking about this whole idea of building a property with the intent of renting it out. So many times, builders build homes that people buy, and maybe 10, 20 years down the road, that neighborhood becomes more of a rental neighborhood. But this whole build-to-rent thing has really taken off.
It really is. It really is. I think in the historical context, if you're an investor, right, many of us cut our teeth in the crash back in 08. And really what was happening then was because so many homes were built, you could literally just buy them for cheaper than it cost to build them.
Yeah.
Well, those days are over.
Right.
That's gone. And in many cases, developers, builders, or investors are finding that it's more economically viable to just build it new. I mean, that's the rationale here, right? I talk to property suppliers and flippers all around the country. Getting properties at the foreclosure auction or through wholesalers, while it's still possible and many of them are doing it, it's a lot harder.
Well,
it used to be.
And the margins aren't what they were.
Right, yeah.
You know, there's only been a couple of periods of time. I often talk to my dad, who's been investing in about to be 8 different decades. And, you know, there's been very few times in his investing career where you could buy below replacement cost. That
right.
set of circumstances doesn't come along very often. But you're right. After the crash, we saw a ton of that. And awesome. Many of us had an advantage to, you know,
go for it.
Grab that,
yeah.
Some of that inventory. But we certainly can't count on that. And those days are gone. And yet, if I want to be in the investment property business, I've got to find somewhere to get inventory. And I think the less margin there is, the more the kind of folks you talk about are taking risk.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You really have to look at it and you have to consider the fact of what am I going to do with my money? But there are some things happening in the overall economy right now that make me bullish about it. Right. I say all the time I eat my own cooking.
Yeah.
But you've got some shifts. And I was at this Build-to-Rent conference a few weeks ago. Something very common that I heard discussed was two demographic shifts are happening. Number one, baby boomers looking for something more convenient, more managed, a managed community with some amenities to it. They want that. And then we all, of course, know about the millennials who, for two reasons, I think, are more likely to rent. Number one, they have a distaste for homeownership.
Yeah.
Right? When they were high school, they saw their parents struggling. It was rough. Why would I want to do that? They don't really want to buy as much. They want to be more mobile. Yeah. And you have millions and millions of them out there where a nice, clean, new space in a managed community is exactly what they want. They get a little bit of that taste of homeownership, but they're not tied down to it. They've got a year, two, three-year lease or something like that. And then you also have the fact, and you know, this really I think is kind of sad, but it's reality. Wages for most people are flat. They've not been going up. Home ownership is getting more and more expensive. You look at since the crash, you know, we've not seen those really bad subprime loans come back in any significant quantity from what I can tell.
Right.
You want to buy a home, you got to pony up. You got to have a good FICO score. You got to have down payments. Those two things together, then you add in the baby boomers, create this rush of demographic into the rental space to where I think, yeah, it still makes sense. You know, build the rent. People do want to live in these. You just got to pick the right markets. And more importantly, I think the right sub-markets within those.
You know, as investors, we are always concerned with demographics. And the big picture of demographics is the ages of folks that you're catering to, for sure. And you've kind of hit on a couple of those. But then within that is where exactly are people going? And this idea of the submarket is critical. If I say I like a market like Dallas, well, Dallas is huge.
Right.
There are so many different nuances and neighborhoods and so on. If you don't know Dallas, you don't know that. It's the same in any of the big markets. And before we're done, we'll talk about a lot of the markets you guys are in, including a new market for you, which we're excited to hear about. But it's not an MSA, a metropolitan statistical area. It is a neighborhood. And as you watch these demographics, you can kind of tell where the puck is going.
Yeah, I think that's a habit that many of us got into from 08. In 08, we got into the habit of saying the market. Right. And that really was a financing thing.
Yeah.
Financing slowed down some of these markets. And in markets where they had tons of supply, it was really an acute slowdown. Well, now we don't have that situation. Now, when we say the market, what do you mean? Right. What part of the market?
Right.
What segment are you looking after? And yeah, I think a build to rent, when we look at this stuff in certain neighborhoods, doesn't make any sense. I was out in this new market. I'll be cryptic about it and tell you tell me what I can say. But I was out there a couple weeks ago and looking at a new piece of acreage. It was a beautiful area. It was a little bit out there, out in the sticks, but it was beautiful. It's the kind of place I would live. Master plan golf course is really great. But it was like 5 p.m. on a Thursday and I was looking at the main highway. There just wasn't a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
I'm like, who's going to live in these rentals? Now, granted, people are coming out here living nice, beautiful houses, but who's going to rent out here? I didn't see it. And I think you have to be very selective about that when you're going to build the rent, because you're really committing to a process. Like you say, where the puck's going to be. When you decide, I'm going to build, you don't have a property tomorrow, right? It's going to be 18 months, sometimes much longer before that property is standing and you can rent it out. So you have to be able to look out on that horizon and see, okay, I'm very confident there's going to be tenants in this area, but you also have to get comfortable with the fact that you can't completely dial in insurance and vacancy and many of these expenses. So you have to have a little bit thicker skin, I think, on build to rent, because it's out there and you're never going to nail it right on the head. You got to get close enough for your own risk tolerance.
Steve, a couple of great points there. First of all, when we talk about the percentage of people that own versus rent, and we've seen home ownership go down and decline, so there are more renters, that's good for investors, but it's not across the board. As you mentioned, in these more suburban areas, there's a higher percentage of owners, and in other areas, there's a higher percentage of renters. So that's one point on the curve. And then the other is, if we're looking for specific inventory for tenants, we have to get into the mind of the tenant. You talked a little bit, for instance, about the millennials, and this is critical. I think it used to be the American dream to own a home, and that's just no longer the case. You know, Russ always says, do the math, and the math will tell you what to do. And that whole, that classic rent versus own scenario that people look like, what would it cost for me to buy a home and have a mortgage, and I'd need that 20% down, I need to qualify and have a good credit score. But then what would that compare to with what it's going to cost me monthly? And having a long-term commitment to a home isn't the same as it used to be. And it doesn't matter what age you're at. We're seeing this across the board. So now you try to dive into a marketplace and say, well, of the folks we're trying to reach who we know are in that group that is more likely to rent, where do they want to be based on their age in life, what they're doing? Are they retired? That's different than are they millennials working? Are they nomadic workers that can work anywhere? I mean, there's a lot to think about.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. We run into that question head on a lot in the Houston market. Houston is still a market where you can buy single family homes relatively affordably,
right?
Compared to many markets in the Western U.S. Whenever we're looking at new opportunities, whatever market, in Utah as well, what is the alternative for the tenant? If we bring in 200 doors here, what else are they looking at? And sometimes we'll run into a situation where in the surrounding neighborhoods, you can rent single family properties for about the same price that we've got to hit on our rent target to make this pro forma viable for an investor.
Yeah.
And we've really been scratching our head about that. And as we've dived deeper and deeper into the research, because we didn't always have this problem. And when we started doing this, we kind of caught lightning in a bottle. Nobody was building,
yep.
Right? Well, that's not the case anymore. But what we've begun to notice as we talk to managers, as we talk to tenants, is tenants view that managed experience with some value. They go look at a home that's for rent for, say, $1,400. That's not the end of the story for that tenant.
Right.
There's going to be costs on top of that. They got to maintain the landscaping. They're going to have their utility bills on top of that. And increasingly, unfortunately for mom and pop, there's this feeling amongst tenants that if my toilet is clogged, you know, what am I going to do? I don't get really great service right away from the mom and pop investor.
Yeah.
In fact, I've heard these tales of mom and pop investor saying, well, go on to Angie's List and get a couple of bids and fix it and I'll pay for it. Right? That's not what the tenant is signing up for.
Right.
Right? They want convenience. They don't want to feel tied down. They don't want that responsibility. They want to pick up the phone and say something's broke, and the fix-it fairy shows up within 12 hours and handles it, and they want some amenities with it too. Right? I'm seeing more and more trends with smart homes, Amazon delivery boxes, electric charging stations. A lot of these things are emerging that give value to these tenants and that they like.
Well, and it's doing that comparison, right? It used to be you'd assume, well, if I could afford a single family home as a tenant, I'd rather have that. But that comes with a whole bunch of stuff, and maybe even more with the millennial and the nomadic lifestyle. People don't want to have to deal with all that. It's one of the advantages of being a tenant, frankly. And in case folks don't know, if you've been listening to our show for a while, you've met Steve. You've been on the program several times. But what you guys do is you build brand new fourplex units that are, quite frankly, a lot more beautiful and nice and modern than you're picturing in your mind. I mean, these are really nice homes, and yet they are attached and they have parking. And so they are an upscale rental, and you build them in communities in such a way that you are able to offer this kind of service, not maybe the fix-it fairy, but there's certainly someone on call when something goes wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the idea is we have to really balance two worlds here. And we get better at it every year, realize new things that we can improve on. But for an investor, right, we all know that a fourplex is a unique investment. It's very good because you can really leverage that Fannie Mae conventional money. That's the best use there is of a 30-year fixed rate mortgage.
Yep.
And you and I have talked about that a ton. Go to the past episodes. But what that creates, though, is now we have a community with 30, 40 different investors.
Yeah.
Now, that can get tricky, especially in your initial completions and lease up, right? It's like herding cats,
yeah.
All right? So we got to herd them. And one way that we do this is through those amenities, through an HOA that maintains that community standard. What if the fourplex owner across the street from you decides he's going to let his tenants park on the lawn?
Right.
Or hang up really tacky sheets in the windows? And do these things that eventually lead to a fourplex community that you think about, when you think about fourplexes,
yeah.
right? That's not what we want. There has to be a uniform standard. So we require, go with the property management. You're in the HOA. There's a uniform standard across the board. So we have that kind of fractionalized ownership throughout the community. But as far as the tenant knows, it's almost like they're in a townhome complex or an apartment complex.
Right.
They've got a pool. They've got a clubhouse. They've got some amenities. There's a property manager they all report to. It creates the same experience across the board. And, you know, juggling all that is a challenge, but we've figured it out and gotten pretty good at it. And it does create that managed community. So if you go through one of our communities that's been there 7-8 years, pretty standard, right? The trees are a little bigger, right? Landscaping's matured a little bit, but it's all taken care of and it's all maintained.
This is the kind of thing you might not think about at the beginning, because yeah. if you just show up and it's brand new and the one across the street is brand new and the one next door is brand new, you think, well, this is great, right? All tenants, given a choice, are going to want something newer to stay in. And yet you have to put your mind as an investor into what is it going to look like 10 years from now. So this is, I think, one of the unique selling propositions that you have. HOAs aren't always popular,
right.
but frankly, they're not popular because homeowners are too busy to be bothered to come to meetings and be involved, and everyone votes no on the dues increase. Investors aren't like that. Owners that are investors are very interested in the long-term health and viability of the complex. So I just think that distinction is important to call out, because as soon as you see HOA, there's some baggage, right?
Yeah.
But here it's a critical point. So investors have to always face the reality that tenants don't live like owners. Some do. I've got some great tenants maybe better even than some owners are. Owners can be, you know, negligent because they own the house. There's no one to answer to. Some tenants are great tenants, take great care of the property, but a lot of tenants don't. So when you make the distinction of building something brand new and putting it in a scenario where it's going to be taken care of, that's kind of the lay of the land, you're going to get a better tenant.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I mean, if you look at any kind of a real estate investment, I hear this regularly, that HOA is pretty expensive. Yeah, but if there isn't an HOA, it's going to be really expensive in 7, 8, 9 years. It's going to get you. You can invest in a neighborhood that doesn't require an HOA because it's so nice, right? There's just pride of ownership everywhere. But guess what? You're going to have to pay.
Right.
It's going to cost.
Of course.
And you said something really good about, you know, these tenants, they're not going to be like owners. That just doesn't happen.
Right.
So there has to be one sheriff in town holding everybody to the same standard. And then you create a community that has a good reputation amongst tenants, especially because more and more, especially when we talk about build to rent, we talk about apartment complexes, managed communities. These tenants also have tools they've never had before, like reviews, Google and Yelp, these places they can go and they can gossip about you, right? If you don't do maintenance or if you don't treat them right, they have choices now too. Right. So you have to create that community. Otherwise, they're going to go somewhere where they, you know, the capital goes to where it's treated best. Right. I probably butchered it, but it's something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Goes to where it's loved and appreciated. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Zig Ziglar used to talk a great teaching that he did. People would say to him, you know, what happens if I spend all this money training my employees and they leave? And he would say, well, what happens if you don't and they stay? Right. So there's always the other side of it. I think especially this type of an investment is suited for someone who thinks a little more long term. Your average investor doesn't come in, buy a fourplex and flip it to another guy in a year. That doesn't make sense. This is a long term investment. And because it's brand new construction, that means that in the time it's delivered, it's going to be brilliantly perfect. And of course, you know, you have all the insurances of that and walkthroughs and checklists and home warranty and builder's warranty and all that. But also, you've got to think through the eyes of durability. So maybe talk about some of the concepts, some of the parts of the property that you've designed from the perspective that tenants are living here.
Right. Well, you've got to value engineer these buildings to where they can be built and sold to where there's an attractive cap rate.
Right.
And also, we do that pretty well. We're pretty good at the value engineered side of things. We can generally deliver units cheaper than almost anybody I know of.
Yeah.
But you have to strike that balance too of, well, there's going to be a tenant living here. And if you just go so cheap, you're going to know, right?
Like you say, you're going to pay eventually,
you're
right?
You're going to pay. How do you want to pay? How and when, right, Robert? So that's how it goes. But we've noticed over time that there are certain finishes. You know, this community that we're going to launch here at the beginning of the year, one thing we've started doing standard is luxury vinyl tile, LVT floor, right? It's meant to take a beating.
Yeah.
It looks good. It looks like wood, but you can drag the couch across it. Dog can run around on it. You know, you can pound on it, and it's going to last a long time.
Yeah.
And we found putting that in the kitchens and the hallways and not the bedrooms. People in most markets like carpet in the bedrooms. Not all, though, right? I wouldn't do that in Florida.
Right.
Right. But LVT is a big deal,
yeah,
for sure. And then we've noticed, you know, different kinds of appliances, finishes on appliances even, right? You know, stainless looks really good, sometimes a little more expensive,
yep,
to upkeep. Granite doesn't cost near what it used to cost.
Yeah.
And it's almost becoming standard in many cases. And a lot of build-to-rent, they do it. We do it in about half of ours where we make it standard. So, but I think really it's that flooring that's key. We've learned when we build apartment style as opposed to townhomes that open stairwells are way better than enclosed stairwells. Those are just maintenance magnets, right? We've learned there are certain kinds of amenities that really make sense. You know, you go a little more basic on your pools, right? You don't want to go off the rails with that kind of stuff. It's going to be a burden on the HOA down the road, but you still provide a good, clean, serviceable amenity to the tenants. But I think primarily it's floor. And then also, we don't get fancy on the paint. Two-tone paint looks fantastic. Yeah. You know, you got your white trim and everything, but that's double the prep time for the painter. If the tenant trashes that unit, that's a lot of prep time. It's going to cost you more. Now, we're lucky all white is kind of in right now,
right,
and it's also cheaper to put in. So we have paint upgrade options that our investors can take. I tell them never to do it.
Yeah.
You know, just go all white. Leave it alone. That's going to be a much cheaper turn if you need to do a paint repair between tenants.
We're talking with Steve Olson from Fourplex Investment Group. When we come back, we'll find out specifically the markets that they're in and the new market they're ready to announce. We'll also play real estate trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com. If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Hungry for more real estate investing ideas? Here's two steps you can take today. First, go to realestateguysradio.com and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get access to a continuous feed of thought-provoking commentary specifically for real estate investors, while also focusing on broader picture economics. Then, once you're at our site, look for the Resources tab, where you'll find our amazing collection of special reports. Browse dozens of white papers, webinars, and market reports, and request the ones that appeal to you. What are you waiting for? Head to realestateguysradio.com to implement education for effective action.
Hi, this is Anthony Melchiori from Hotel Impossible, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Welcome to the most wonderful time of the year. We're glad that you're spending some holiday time listening to The Real Estate Guys radio show, and we certainly appreciate our amazing listeners. We're talking today about this idea of buying a property that's brand new rather than a used property as an investor, but it was really built for you as an investor, what we call build to rent. Before we get back to our interview with Steve Olson, it's time to play real estate trivia. That's your chance to win a prize by knowing today's real estate trivia question. In just a minute, I'll give you a question that has something to do with real estate and the holiday season. And if you think you know or want to take a guess, send your best guess to trivia at realestateguysradio.com. You'll need to include your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address, because if you're the winner, we're going to send you an awesome book called Desire, Discipline, and Determination. This is an incredible book full of awe-inspiring stories put together by our great friend Kyle Wilson. That can be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week, we were in Phoenix, and we asked this. Arizona is home to several professional sports teams, which of course include the Arizona Cardinals, the Diamondbacks, and the Phoenix Suns. Arizona used to have a professional lacrosse team. What were they called? Well, they were the Arizona Sting, and they were in Arizona from 2003 to 2007. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. What city was known as the Christmas Pickle Capital of the World? Yeah, you heard that right. The Christmas Pickle Capital of the World. Now, you may be thinking I'm making that up, but I'm not. This is an interesting story. We'll tell you the rest of it next week. But if you want to take a guess, or who knows, maybe you were born there. What city is the Christmas Pickle Capital of the World? Send your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, your mailing address, and the answer to the question. The first person that gets it right gets a copy of Desire, Discipline, and Determination. That's today's real estate trivia question. We're talking about buying a brand new property as an investor, build to rent, developers that provide this kind of inventory, which is ideal for so many reasons. And our guest is Steve Olson, who's been with us several times and at Fourplex Investment Group. It kind of says it right there. What you guys do is investors who want these four-unit buildings, big, beautiful buildings that are designed in such a way that they're very tenant-friendly, very attractive to tenants, and yet long-term are easier to take care of, perhaps. So a lot of good advantages there. Of course, all of that is meaningless unless you talk about the market, because a market is where we find the tenants. You know, Steve, before the break, you gave the example of being so far out of town, there's not a lot of traffic. And traffic is one of the things you need. You want the tenant to say, this would be a great place to live because it's close to, fill in the blank, where they go every day, where their family is, where their work, all those things. So finding markets critical. Take us through kind of your history. You guys have been doing this a long time, and you've picked some markets very strategically that, in hindsight, have worked out very well.
Yeah. Well, we try to pay attention to what we're doing there. And I think that strategically, we're looking for population growth. We're looking for employment. You can get past a lot of things if you have those two things.
Yeah.
Right? They really help a lot. But the first market that we ever started, and we kind of got lucky because it was our home market, which was the Utah market,
yeah,
specifically the Wasatch Front. That's the Salt Lake City metro, really playing along the southern side of that, which is where Provo is. So that's really where we jumped off. And it was at a good time, right? And back in 2010, 2011, nobody was building anything. Everybody
right.
was still scared to death to build. But the population had been growing.
And there was demand that you saw in spite of all that inventory and all that. There was demand and specifically for newer, nicer stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It didn't exist, right? And it was a bit of kind of a unique time because you could – you can't do this now, but you could put up 150 units and you could have that thing leased within 30 to 60 days. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Right? You can't do that now.
No.
You know, right now now that there's more construction happening, and, you know, especially as you and I record this, it's the dead of winter, right? It's almost Christmas, and you're going to sign a few leases a week in every one of your projects, and people move in, and then it accelerates through the spring.
Sure.
And we see that across the board, and we saw that as we expanded into our next two markets. The one after the Salt Lake City metro was actually Houston. Kind of odd to go from Salt Lake City to Houston, but we have the right people on the ground in Houston that we could hire because we can't just kind of go in willy-nilly. We've got to hire staff. We've got to put people on the ground full time, and you're always going to learn new things going into a new market.
Every
right?
market's a little different.
Oh, you think you learn it all, but some of it you just got to hit your head against the wall a few times.
Yep.
and learn where the wall is, right? And so we went into Houston, and we've had some of your clients invest with us there. We're on our third project under construction right now in Cypress, Texas, which is on the northwest side of the Houston metro. Great area right along the 290, which goes to Austin.
Yep.
So we've been making our way through that on construction in the third phase right now. And it's still some investors dropping into our last phases that they'll start early next year.
Yeah.
And that's been a great one for us so far. And the one before that, we've got a few of your clients into over in Spring, Texas. That's going through its lease up
yep.
Phase right now. About that same time, we went into the Boise, Idaho market.
Yep.
And I'm happy to say we were kind of ahead of the curve on that one. It's not a secret now what's happening in Boise. It's out there. And that's a market that's relatively easy for us to operate in. It's a six-hour drive and a quick flight.
Yeah.
We've got staff on the ground. We're on our second development there right now, taking some reservations in through that. You look at the Boise market. It's made up primarily of Boise, Meridian, and Nampa are the main cities up there.
Yep.
Tons and tons of growth, jobs coming in from the Northwest, from those less business-friendly states.
Yep.
Love to go into Boise where it's a lot more business-friendly. And, the vacancy rate is really low across the board in the whole Boise metro. They're not keeping up. So we're going to help them.
Yeah.
All right. That's our idea there. So those are the markets that we've been operating in. We've been looking for a long time as to where we would like to go next. It takes a while to decide that. And in the Phoenix, Arizona area where we're going to be expanding into, the entitlement process, working with the cities, it takes a while.
Yeah.
We've had land under contract for quite a while down there, but we're ready now. We're moving into our first couple of projects, and we're excited to be there because that is not the market that it was back in 2005.
Yeah.
It's a different place.
You know, we've been involved in Phoenix for a lot of years. I think I first went into Phoenix and purchased a rental property in 2003. Maybe it was 2002. I bought a 24-unit building. And from there, we've had a big presence in Phoenix a long time. Ironically, last week's show, we taped in Phoenix and we talked about the Phoenix market. And one of the things that's hit me in that market is as we watched it develop, there hasn't been as much new build. There's certainly been some apartment complexes that have come up and some single family houses. But the challenge you guys have is because you're building these campuses, you need a pretty good chunk of land.
Yeah.
And if you drive through Phoenix, there's just not that much. So
right.
Talk about where you found opportunity in Phoenix and what you like about the market.
It's huge, right? We were joking about the market, right? It's a huge metro.
Top five.
Yeah, exactly. So it's tough to get land that's affordable in central Phoenix, in the city. I love the east side of the valley. It's great.
Yeah.
It's also expensive. We're talking Mesa, Gilbert.
Yep.
My dad has a house out there in Mesa. It's great. We go down there on vacation all the time. Beautiful this time of year.
Yep.
What we found the value is in working that west side of the valley.
Okay.
In the right neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So the project that we have coming, well, there's two of them. One of them is in El Mirage, which is kind of a blue-collar area.
Yep.
But they have a desperate need for more housing out there that's affordable for people that work in those kind of sectors.
Yep.
And we've got some dirt under contract in Surprise, which is right next to El Mirage, right off the 303 there.
Sure.
It's excellent location. And you will not recognize it in 18 months from now because the acreage is all carved up by home builders. And you are seeing some of these single-family build-to-rent providers out there, like Hancock and Avila.
Yeah.
They've gone in. They've put communities out on that side of the valley. Because you're close enough to employment centers, you're going to commute a half hour or so to your work typically being out there. But it's a little bit more affordable. And all the amenities that you could need, right, the grocery stores and everything – is all out there. So sometimes, it's out west, different place now, different place. And the whole thing is under construction right now.
You know, when we first started going to Las Vegas, Nevada, many, many years ago, there was a gentleman that spoke for a title company, worked with a title company and spoke many times at the events that we would do in our field trips and so forth. And he made an interesting comment. He said that if it wasn't for gambling, Las Vegas would be the size of Phoenix. Well, Las Vegas is nowhere near the size of Phoenix. And his point was a lot of companies that relocated in the 70s, 80s, and 90s chose Phoenix because they didn't want the stigma of Las Vegas. Now, today we've seen Las Vegas grow and prosper and flounder and all the things it does. It's a resilient market. But Phoenix has been the better choice on a lot of levels. And one of the things is you've got such a diverse economy there. I mean, not everyone realizes when we talked a little bit about it last week, but what a logistics hub it is and how much commerce flows through that market.
Absolutely. We've spent a lot of time down there over the last year talking to banks, talking to brokers, property managers, construction teams. I think that this is healthy, but many of them, they've got some battle scars.
Yeah.
Because Phoenix, it was rough. It's just so much building that happened in Phoenix. And that economy has grown up a lot. A lot.
Yeah.
It was relatively diverse, but still heavily dependent on construction and tourism, a lot of that going on. Now we've got medical, tech, government, education, logistics. When an area gets a lot of logistics, that's great. Tons and tons of jobs that come with that need affordable housing. So the general consensus is, it's kind of fun. We commented after every meeting that we leave is, you know, hey, those people, they had a rough time during the downturn, but everybody's confident down there now. They know, okay, people live here. They actually need housing stock. They need apartments where, you know, they got a little out of hand back in the boom like everybody did with building all this stuff.
Right.
But it's grown up a lot and they remember it. You know, it's fresh on their minds and they're aware of it. But I think that the economy, the job growth rate is there to justify it.
And it's diverse. That's the other thing about it. You don't just have an industry there. You have a variety of industries, and the climate is pretty darn good. Now, let's talk about that for a minute, because certainly being in markets like Salt Lake and Boise, there are times where it gets pretty cold. Being in a market like Houston, it gets pretty hot. Well, Phoenix gets really hot. So what are the things you have to think about building where maybe you only see snow every 10 years, but you always see temperatures in the hundreds?
Well, yeah, your style of construction needs to be different. You know, for example, in Utah and Idaho, we use Douglas for timber. In Houston, you got to use white pine.
Yeah.
Right? I don't even know what we got to use in Phoenix. I know it's in our spec sheets. I got to check on that. But it is a different construction material that you're going to use down there. You're seeing them go a little bit more and more to shingles, but still a lot of tiled roofs that they're doing down there. Different air conditioning systems, a lot bulkier, more resilient that you're going to have to use. The furnace that you put in your units in Houston is just teensy weensy because you just hardly ever need it.
Right.
But that air conditioner in Houston, that air conditioner in Phoenix needs to be big. It's going to get used and abused. You're going to put amenities into these things. You know, we put sunshades over all of our playgrounds. You've got to do that.
Right.
Mom's going to take the kids to play in August. You got to have that sunshade or it's not happening, right? So there's definitely a different standard. A lot of times, too, we notice when we start coming up with our initial HOA projections, you see different costs and different standards for each market, right? Insurance costs a lot in Houston. You're going to see different things like pest removal that you got to put in your budget there, whereas in Idaho, you don't really need much of a pest removal budget.
Right.
It doesn't happen. So you're going to need one in Phoenix. You need a pest removal budget. That warm climate brings different kinds of creatures that are going to come out. And so you have to quote those kinds of things in there. And just the different insurance coverages that they're willing to offer. That's insurance just keeps going up and up and up. I remember a couple years ago after that year where we had Hurricane Harvey and then we had all the wildfires in the Western U.S. I mean, we saw our builder's risk insurance policies double in cost. And that's hitting all the investors across the board. Investors go, oh, this is terrible. I can't cash flow as much because of insurance. But I think what you have to remember, it's not just you who has higher cost of insurance.
That's right.
This settles into the market over time. Everybody has it. It eventually turns up in the rents. These poor tenants are the ones that ultimately absorb it over time because it costs what it costs to operate properties and to construct them according to local building code.
Yep. Same thing with property tax, right? Property tax pretty high in the state of Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Not so much in Arizona. It's a lower tax jurisdiction. It's not, a no-tax jurisdiction. So you have to balance all that. I think one of the big picture items is that when you have a choice of markets, it's different than that. Well, all we had at first was we were in the Salt Lake market. That's where we are. And so you sell that market and the reasons for that market, and you guys are very strategic about it. And in hindsight, was a good bet, worked well, but you knew the market.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, an investor's interested in what you guys do, which is brand new, beautiful fourplexes, they have a choice. And it really, at the end of the day, you've certainly got your build schedules and your projects and so forth, but people are going to vote based on how they perceive it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of that is emotional. Some of it is close to me, or I have somebody that lives there.
Right.
Some people would avoid Utah because of the cold. They think that's going to be a problem. I have others that buy because they want to ride off their ski trip. Right? That's why they do it. Other people wouldn't touch Houston with a 10-foot pole, right? Because, hurricanes and everything. Well, actually, those have made properties in the areas that don't flood more valuable,
right?
So there's always these kinds of trade-offs. I don't have a right answer. We do our best to go into the markets that make sense, where we feel like there's population growth. But we have those conversations about here's the pros, here's the cons of this market.
Yep.
You got to choose them. They're, you know, the money's not free. You make the best choice that you can.
Yeah, good point. And in fact, you guys don't just guess. You do a lot of research and you're looking a lot at the markets and you put together a great report for us about specifically Phoenix and what's going on. And so before we're done, we'll tell you and get a hold of that. A lot of great information in that report. Obviously, you guys have been studying the market long before you made the decision to go there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we've seen tons and tons of employment, a lot of people coming in from California.
Yeah.
Southern California is my home away from home, second home in many ways. But wow, it is not business friendly.
No.
When I give presentations to investors, I show this cheesy cartoon that says, it has a picture of California. And it says, if you want to start a business in California, there are a number of roads that you can take. And it shows the 10, the 5, all the freeways leaving California, right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's a wonderful place in so many ways. But, you know, if you're really honest with yourself, it's a terrible place to start a business.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so these areas, especially in the Intermountain West, the Southwest, are really benefiting from that. People are going there. They're starting businesses. You know, we've seen 47 large corporations relocate to Phoenix in the last 2 years. And we've seen 72,000 jobs added in 2019. Right. And we've got all that data in the report that you can see. The point is, people are moving in. They need housing stock. They need places to live because it's not keeping up.
Yeah. If you're interested in the Phoenix market, all you have to do is send an email to phoenixmetro@realestateguysradio.com. phoenixmetro@realestateguysradio.com. That'll also give you the contact information for Fourplex Investment Group. Talk about that, how somebody gets on the list, because one of the challenges and opportunities you've had is that this is a product that's in demand. And often I think people are surprised when they learn it's kind of a waiting list. There's kind of a time frame it takes to get into a property. You're not going to be able to get in tomorrow. There's a ramp up time.
Oh yeah, there's a ramp up time, and that it's good to know the reality of the situation. We're dealing with development here.
Yeah.
Right. Oftentimes, when you start talking to us about a market, we might be saying, "Yeah, well, we expect this project to be able to go vertical in, right? You know, this one coming up in El Mirage is not until late summer of 2020."
Yeah.
So yeah, you're going to be waiting, and that's starting construction.
Right.
Right. That's the point. So it's going to take time. So reach out to us. Let's have the conversations about the market. Let us get you the data and let us walk you through the process. Right. There's a new construction process with financing that you're going to go through here. And it's important to understand that and what you're getting into. And it has its pros and cons. You know, people come to us sometimes, "I need a unit right now. I've got a 1031 exchange." Well, yeah, at any given time, we've got pocket listings of completed deals, and that's great. You can close on it now, but what's the con? You're buying at market.
Right.
When you buy ahead of time, pre-construction, they make fun of me at the office, but I call it the armchair value add, because we know in real estate, Robert, the term highest and best use. Right. When you're taking a piece of dirt and turning it into an income-producing asset in a fourplex community, you converted it to its highest and best use, and generally the market recognizes value in that. Some people call it forced appreciation. But you don't just get it. You were the one that waited.
Yeah.
You went through the wait. You went through the build. You went through the stabilization period where, hey, you know, you don't have 200 tenants lining up right when it's done. It's not 2010 anymore.
Right.
Okay. Right. It takes a little bit of time. But if you know that and you understand what it's going to be like, you're going to end up with a brand new investment in a managed community in a growing market. And that's a good thing for investors.
Oh, it's awesome. And here's why it's a great thing for the developer. They have certainty, surety. A developer that builds on spec and hopes a buyer comes along has that period of time from when they get their certificate of occupancy while it's on the market that could be a month or it could be a year, and that's the big risk. But when you know that you sell it and then build it, then that weans a lot of the risk out of it, and therefore you can deliver it at a better price. People say, well, why does it make sense for them to sell it at a price when they know they could get more? It's because that creates that investor demand. And I know many of the investors, many of our listeners, don't just want to buy one fourplex, right? They want to get into several.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got to hope and pray you're going to build 200 doors and cross your fingers that there are investors on the other end, any rational person is going to charge a price accordingly. They're going to say, well, for my risk, I want X amount of dollars.
Right.
So this is just a way for investors, you know, you're a busy professional, But you want to get a little bit better of a deal, right? I look at the market in Phoenix right now for small multifamily properties. It's not good. It's not good almost everywhere right now. The cap rates are so compressed.
Yep.
And generally, I find this weird thing happening right now. People even refer to it as gross cap rate. You know, you don't even know what they're saying when they talk about cap rates anymore. Who's including what? What assumptions are they using? And, you know, this people might advertise them at 6 or 7 in Phoenix, but it's really old. It's not in a great neighborhood. You're going to have a ton of deferred maintenance. So if you as an investor can have something brand new at a cap rate that's a little better than what the open market will bring, that's a good use of the capital. You just got to let it bake for a couple of years minimum because, you know, you're not trying to be a flipper here.
Right.
Right. It's designed to really take advantage of that demographic wave and the population growth.
Awesome. Hey, let's talk about one more thing before we get out of here. And that is a lot of folks believe that we are kind of long in the cycle, and that's true. And we're probably closer to the next turn down than we know. And every day we get closer, who knows how long. But talk specifically about how this particular product type might weather a downturn.
Well, it actually has. All right, when we started doing this, we were in the middle of a downturn.
Yep.
I think the key is affordable housing. We've mentioned this before, but you know, things that are happening with wages, generally in the economy, you know, they say the rich get richer. Unfortunately, I think that's kind of true.
Yeah.
And builders, number one, have not been keeping up. Many of these builders that went out of business, these trades that vanished in 2008, they've not come back.
Right.
What I see really happening here, and I tell people this regularly, what we saw in the downturn of 08 was a massive amount of supply hitting at the same time as financing almost completely drying up.
Yeah.
And that's why you could buy properties for less than what you could build them for.
Right.
And that was because of, this is basic economics. This is supply and demand. We have a situation right now where we have a lot of demand. We do not have the supply that we had in 08. And I don't see that clearing up anytime soon, Robert. And it may sound self-serving, but I do put my money where my mouth is. I buy these fourplexes too. I buy real estate too. Until these millennials take off the beanies and stop trying to program apps at Starbucks, who's going to frame houses? Who's going to lay tile? I don't see where all this labor is going to come from. And it's going to continue to put pressure. I think at worst, you probably go sideways for a while. And I think what we really make the mistake of doing is that because 08 happened, it's going to happen exactly the same way that it did before. On that same business cycle, right, of recessions every 7 to 10 years. Typically, during recessions, housing is held up pretty well.
Yeah.
All right? 08 was a weird thing. I agree. Nobody wants to see it happen again. I do know this, though. I owned rentals in 08. I got my rent.
Well, it's such a good point. When we go and speak at somebody else's event, which we're often invited to do, there's two charts we always show, and it has to do with that Great Recession period. And we show what happened to housing values from 06, 07, 08, 09, 10. And then we show what happened to rents. And the rents barely came down across the board because even though times were tough, people had to get up, go to work, pay their rent, and live somewhere. And so values took a plunge, but rents didn't. And this is one of the key concepts when it comes to rental real estate. The price only matters when you're going to sell. If I buy a brand new fourplex and I'm planning to keep it in my portfolio for 10, 20, 30 years, maybe keep it in my family, give it to my kids, it doesn't matter what it's worth. What matters is, are there people willing to pay rent to live there? And because you pick the markets right and you build a great product, the likelihood of that is high. And that's really the only thing you can do as an investor.
I think so. You can't time the market.
No.
And we start to think that maybe you could because a few people did in, you know, historic ways back in 08. You've seen The Big Short. I love that movie.
Yep.
Right? I mean, they timed the market.
Yeah.
You're not going to do that.
No.
You know, if you could do that, that'd be great. You know, give me a call. But I think really you have to just look at that medium to long-term hold. And if you go into deals responsibly, you don't lever up too much. You keep reserves because the key is, like you say, you have to be able to operate and rent out the property. And for the most part, lenders aren't letting you go in without reserves on these deals. And that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
But if you've got capital because this thing needs to get fixed or that needs, then you can preserve that income stream and you can ride through any kind of uncertainty. I personally think that affordable housing and not luxury housing is a good bet if you feel like a recession of some kind is imminent. I think that would be a good thing because you see people move down into those that kind of housing.
Yep.
And during an expansion, people are moving up and they need a jumping off point. So it tends to work either way. If you go in with enough down, though, and you use true 30-year fixed rate debt, you know, maybe you got to cut your rents a little bit. You got to get through a period, but you're not dying on the vine.
Right.
And what's great about a fourplex, I do say that it's recession resistant. I would never say anything is recession proof.
Right.
I lived in 08. Okay. Yep. But saying something is recession resistant, that 30-year fixed rate mortgage means nobody's telling you got to pay this off. Right. Make the payment for 30 years yep. and it's yours. There's no balloon. There's no arm. Right. None of that stuff comes with it. And then also you got four streams of income to service one stream of debt. So not totally recession proof, but you can move around a little bit with that and you can get through tough times if they come.
Good stuff. Well, hey, if this sounds interesting to you, investing in something brand new, no deferred maintenance, going to last a long time in cool marketplaces, just send an email to phoenixmetro@realestateguysradio.com. phoenixmetro@realestateguysradio.com. You get the latest report from FIG on this marketplace in particular and all their contact details so you can get a conversation about what else they do, how it works, what the waiting list looks like, and so forth. Steve, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks for being on the program today.
Yeah, good to see you again.
There's Steve Olson from Fourplex Investment Group. When we come back, you're tuned to the Real Estate Guys Radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
When it comes to successful rental property investing, it pays to be picky. Pick the right markets, pick profitable properties, and pick great property management. That's easier said than done, but we've got great news. Jerry Kerr and his rockstar team at Mid-South Homebuyers are going strong in Memphis, Tennessee, and Little Rock, Arkansas, too. So for a top-notch turnkey single-family home rental property, whether you're a new investor or have a large portfolio already, pick Terry Kerr and Mid-South for a truly A-plus investing experience. To learn more, send an email to midsouth@realestateguysradio.com. That's midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Do you have a self-directed IRA invested in a syndication? Guess what? It's a ticking time bomb. Why? Because IRAs get hit with UBIT taxes, even Roth IRAs. Hi, I'm Damian Lupo, and we fix this problem for you forever. It gets even better because using the EQRP, you can literally get rid of taxes from all of your gains forever and protect your nest egg. The EQRP is the best vehicle to get it done. IRAs can't do it, not even Roth IRAs. You see, UBIT happens whenever any type of IRA invests in anything with debt. Don't worry, even if your IRA is already invested in a deal, we can kill that tax. Our team at Total Control Financial is here to give you control of your retirement money and free you from that deadly IRA tax forever. Want to learn more about the EQRP? Send an email to eqrp@realestateguysradio.com. I'll email you my special report and send you a copy of the QRP book. Paying a 37% UBIT tax is stupid. First step to getting rid of that tax is to send an email to eqrp@realestateguysradio.com today.
Hi, this is Steve Forbes. You're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Have fun. You'll learn something.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys Radio Show. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. If you've ever wanted to do bigger deals using other people's money, well, then come on out to The Secrets of Successful Syndication. It takes place in March in Dallas, Texas. An amazing faculty, an awesome workbook, and you'll meet incredible investors. You'll get all the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. Well, it's always good to hear from Steve Olson.
It is. You know, these guys are great guys. I had a chance to go up to their summit in Salt Lake City and visit with them. And you always love to work with people that are doing the business in the real world, but they take time out of their schedules to teach and to bring people together. You know, you and I, Robert, are big believers in sharing ideas and getting people together. And we attend conferences. We like to promote conferences and produce conferences. And so it's always gratifying to work with people that are just good people and want to give back to the industry like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a big part of what they do, of course, is to help educate investors about the markets because they've spent so much time analyzing the markets. It's one thing if you're going to go and buy a house in a marketplace. And we've talked about that a lot, how you can go and do your due diligence, your market analysis, and then hopefully buy more than one property so you quote unquote, amortize the cost of all that research and that time and that travel over more than one property. Well, they take it kind of a step more. They have to go find a big chunk of land to be able to do what they're doing. And then in doing so, they go through the market analysis. They see the trends. They know where the demand is. And you get a benefit from that through things like the report that they do. They've done reports on all the markets that they're in. And the latest market they're heading into is Phoenix. So if you'd like more information on that, just send an email to phoenixmetro@realestateguysradio.com. phoenixmetro@realestateguysradio.com. And of course, last week we had PJ Hussey on, and that was awesome to hear from them. They're also active in Phoenix in a completely different way. That report's available by just sending an email to phoenix@realestateguysradio.com.
Yeah, Steve, you know, Steve and his group have really done a good job as we've watched them over the years in their market selection. They seem to really be able to pick markets that are working for the right reasons, and they've got a pretty good track record of doing that. And I love the fact that they lead with the market first. We talk about that all the time, how important it is that you need to, you know, understand the market first and then the team second, and then you get in there and pick your property. And in this case, you know, they're making a much bigger investment. They're not just in there flipping a few houses. They're out there making major investments. And so the level of homework that they do when they pick their markets, I think, is top-notch. So I think that report is going to be a good read.
You know, Steve came out to the Secrets of Successful Syndication in September. He's planning on being there in March as well, too. So come on out and pick his brain. And this could be great inventory for you syndicators out there. So again, you can get the report by sending an email to phoenixmetro@realestateguysradio.com. Big thanks to Steve Olson for taking the time to travel to Dallas to do this show. And for all of you, thanks so much for listening. Enjoy the holiday season with the people you care about the most. We've got one more show before the end of the year. Until then, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.